Hello and welcome back to the Fantasy Ramble here on Energy Sport. I'm Jack Donnelly, and after what seemed like an eternity, we can finally get back to talking about what we know best as the Premier League makes its return this week. And with it comes the return of the official Fantasy Premier League game. If anyone's listening to our show for the first time and wants to get involved in the competition with our league, you can join us with the code X1LJML. That's the first time I've said that in many months, and it's still as fresh in the memory. For some more content, and you can get our uploaded predictions after this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Ramble. Now, for long-time listeners of the show, everyone should be aware of the fact that there are usually four of us per episode. There's me, and then another three of the boys with another two that tend to miss out. But for such a big occasion like this, and the return of English football in the Premier League, we've managed to get all six of us on today's show for the first time ever. So give yourselves a round of applause for making this far, boys. We've done well. Love that. First up, with the worst five-a-side team in history, we've got Mr. Graham Sinclair, who's been leading our personal league for many months now. Graham, are you at all worried that you could end up relinquishing your title by the end of July, should things go to pot very quickly?
What do you mean the worst five-a-side team in history?
That's 5 years, mate.
That's unfair.
How's that unfair?
I'm winning this thing. It's over. I'm Liverpool. The league's over. It's all but mathematical.
All but mathematical.
If you guys try to put in a null and void, I wouldn't allow it. It would be finished on a points per game basis, and I would have got my money. I can't win money anymore.
Already spent your money.
Definitely already spent that 35 quid.
I might not have any money by the time somebody else wins. I might be skinned.
Just an IOU for next season, it would end up having to be.
But yeah, Graham Sinclair will win the fantasy. I'd double down if I could.
Double down. What would that be, a tenner to everyone if he didn't?
I'd bet 100 to get 5 off everyone else.
That's fair enough. There we go, that's good confidence from the outset. Next up, we've got Mr. Struan Garvey, who's spent his time away from watching Manchester United by supporting the likes of Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, as their leagues have already resumed. So, has it been good to stop glory hunting? I say that quite tentatively, because if you're a Man United fan, that's all you really do. But to support your actual team, I suppose, Struan, you must be happy.
I don't know where the Real Madrid came in. Ever since Ronaldo left, I've not really been too bothered by them. But it's going to be mixed emotions, to be honest. I think it's kind of like I've been excited and missing it, but then I know the day that they play, I'm just going to remember why, you know, it's not as great to watch United these days. But in terms of fantasy, I could maybe catch Graham, maybe. Probably not.
It's all if, buts, or maybes. Graham's dealing in absolutes at this point, isn't he? Next up, we've also got Jamie McIntosh joining us, who, like me, has seen his club being surprisingly active in transfer dealings over the last couple of months. Jamie, while Chelsea won't have the likes of Timo Werner or Hakim Ziyech in their squad before next season, are you looking forward to seeing an almost fully fit Chelsea squad for the first time in what seems like forever?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, we played QPR, I think it was, in a closed doors friendly. And I think we won 7-1, was it?
I think so, yeah.
And, you know, albeit it's QPR, but at the same time, Arsenal were beaten by Brentford. So I think there's positives to be taken by scoring 7 goals. I think Loftus-Cheek scored 2 as well, so looking forward to seeing him back in action. So to answer your question, a very simple yes. I think Chelsea have got a very good opportunity to kick on and secure a top 4 spot, if you like.
Lovely optimism. I like that. I'm a big fan of that. Billy Gilmore also scored 2 in that game. I'll just any point to talk up Billy Gilmore, I will. Also with us here today is Taylor Murray. And with all Fantasy Premier League players being granted unlimited transfers before tomorrow's 5 p.m. deadline, I've no doubt in my mind that Taylor will have made some decisions that some would call bold and others would just call stupid. So, I mean, am I being too a presumptuous, Taylor? Have you been a bit more sensible this time than you've been typically known for?
I've tried to go more sensible now. Whether that works out is now. I feel like this is harder than the start of the season to predict who's going to play and who's not. Because I don't even know, like, what's going to happen. Like, I don't know. I still don't know. I'll probably change it before, you know, the end of this.
I've to be fair, I think everyone will have been tinkering away with it, trying to figure out who to put in there. Mine's changed hands about 10 different times in the last couple of days, just going back and making alterations. So I think, like everyone else, we'll just be waiting until 4:59 to submit that final team before the deadline tomorrow. And finally, we're joined by a man who's been very elusive these past couple of months. He moved himself back down to England, I'm going to say, to get away from the rest of us, but it might not be that. And he's evaded any call-ups to appear on previous episodes of The Ramble. But we've managed to secure him for today's episode, and we're happy to have him back. Ralph Boyd is here.
Harry, I'm out of hiding.
Out of hiding. How are you? I feel like we've not really spoken to you for months now.
I haven't avoided in that sort of sense that I didn't want to come on. I just sort of didn't read the messages in time. But it's good to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. We'll get on to business because we have a lot to get through today. Because it's our return episode with the Premier League, we're going to be covering all 12 games that this game week has to offer. 12 games, so City, Arsenal, Villa and Sheffield United all have double game weeks. So our first piece of advice would probably be to get some definite starters in from these teams. I know with Pep Guardiola's history, that's easier said than done, but you should be able to figure out the likes of De Bruyne. I probably won't miss any games anytime soon. It might also not be a bad idea to invest in some highly sought-after youth prospects from teams as well, due to the fact that teams are going to be playing at least 9 times over the next 5 weeks, and with the 5 substitution rule being implemented for the remainder of the season, squad rotation is going to be a massive part of this restart. To save time with covering all 12 games in this episode, we're going to be coming to one of the boys for each game, so to give everyone a fair chance to get their points across. So we'll crack on with the first game, which comes on Wednesday evening, and it takes the form of Aston Villa taking on Sheffield United at Villa Park. Last time out, a few months ago now, Villa were brushed aside in a 4-0 defeat to Leicester, while the Blaze overcame a surprise test from Norwich to win 1-0. Graham, I'll come to you for this game. Both teams do have a lot to play for coming back from their time away. Villa are looking to get themselves out of the relegation zone, while Sheffield United are chasing European qualification. Are we expecting both teams to come out in this one swinging?
Yes, I think they will. It's got the makings of a good game, of course. Villa have struggled to concede the most goals this season so far, and they've looked really vulnerable at the back, and they've struggled going forward as well since they've lost John McGinn. But of course, John McGinn is now back. He was out since December with a fractured ankle, and he has returned to the fold, which will be massive for Villa's survival hopes. And I don't really think that it's going to work out in the end, but at least it gives him more of a chance, because Grealish and McGinn are their two best players. As for Sheffield United, it's just going to be business as usual. They had a fairly fit squad before the resumption they do now. I think a lot of people kind of think that Sheffield United were a team that maybe came up and were punching above their weight, but I've said before, I don't see that. I just think they're a wonderful football team. They have such a unique tactical style with three at the back and centre-backs overlapping, but solid centre midfielders that can all pass the ball and create. The only thing they lack is a quality striker, which in their chase for Europe is the one thing that could be their problem. But I love Sheffield United, and I think they've got a chance to get even Champions League. I wouldn't put it past them.
The only thing
about Sheffield United is they do play the whole of the 3rd place to 10th place in their remaining games. They play Palace, they play Newcastle, and then they have this horrendously difficult run where they play all the teams around them in the league, which might be their undoing. But I think it would be silly to overlook them, and they do definitely have a chance of getting a European spot.
I would agree. I think they definitely do have a very good chance, especially where they're sitting just now. But one thing I wanted to touch on, obviously since it's been about 100 days since we last saw Premier League action, form's just kind of been chucked out the window. And momentum has slowed. So do you think a team like Sheffield United, who have been high-flying throughout the season, will feel the effect of that kind of drop in momentum, or do you think they will just be able to come back and resume business as usual?
I think they can come back as business as usual. I think they have, as I said, I don't just say it there. I think the team is good enough. I don't think they're a team that are just kind of playing the peak of their powers. What just happened? Sorry, something just dropped. Sorry.
I don't think they were just competing at the peak of their powers, and or their form was more than their work, like playing better than they actually are. I do think the team that they were when the season was playing is a team that like was them playing just at their level. And so I don't think the break could have a massive impact. I think the only thing would be for them, no fans. I think Bramall Lanes was quite a fortress for them, wonderful atmosphere there. So like a lot of teams, they might struggle more at home, but I still have faith that they're going to be okay.
So we'll just kind of wrap up this game because we've got a lot to get through, so we're not going to be spending a lot of time on each game. We're just going to be giving a couple of quick points. Any key players you'd have to stand out that you'd be wanting to suggest anyone puts in their teams? I know this is the first time we've been able to talk about a certain Mr. John Lundstrom for many, many months now. So, I mean, his position was looking a bit more reserved in the team, especially since Sander Berger was introduced in January. So, would you recommend to bring in Lundstrom or any other Sheffield United players, or Villa players for that matter?
I think I've mentioned him, John McGinn's back, and at 5.4 million, that's a steal.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great player, he was performing well, and he was getting people points for their teams before he got injured. That's basically, you have Grealish, is good. Grealish is a bit more expensive, but at 6.4 million, he's got 118 points already, which is an incredible output. So those two for Villa, other than that, I would avoid the rest of them like the plague. They can't defend, and their strikers are bad. For Sheffield United, there's really not much you can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have six defenders with over 90 points, including Lundstrom, although I'd stay away from Lundstrom. I think you're right that Sander Berg came in and took his place. Henderson's been one of the top keepers in the league. John Fleck's a really good cheap midfielder to have. I wouldn't go for any strikers for them. They don't have great goal scoring strikers, but pretty much any defender and John Fleck for me for Sheffield United, and you can't go wrong because they're all good cheap options.
Fantastic. And just finally, before we move on, have you got a score prediction for us?
2-1 Sheffield United.
Lovely. That's fantastic. Well, that's a good way to start things off. The second fixture on Wednesday night is an absolute corker, as Manchester City host Arsenal at the Etihad. City went into the postponement of the league, having lost the Manchester Derby 2-0, with Scott McTominay stealing the points in tremendous fashion, while Arsenal extended their unbeaten run to 8 games with a 1-0 win against West Ham. Raf, as the resident Arsenal fan, you've been very pessimistic when I've spoken to you about this match in the weeks leading up to it. Are you still in that same mindset of there's nothing to gain for Arsenal from this game?
It's going to be an absolute horror show.
Really?
It's going to be terrible. We lost to Brentford, like Jamie said.
Brentford have been flying high, though. I mean, they've been...
Aye, but not Man City, Jack.
They're not Man City, you're right.
If they can beat us, you know...
You've got no hope whatsoever. You're just expecting the worst.
I have literally no hope, and I've got no faith in Arsenal. It's as simple as that. I think we might score a goal or two, because, you know, Man City might be rusty, but they'll just overrun us and dominate us.
And I'd imagine the goal that you're talking about would probably come from a certain Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang if he hits the ground the same way.
I think it's going to be a very typical sort of, he obviously puts in a world-class performance, and then the rest of the team lets him down incredibly badly.
If that happens, does that put his future a bit more up in the air then? Because there's been a lot of talk of him not wanting to extend his contract and wait for a new challenge elsewhere. So if he does put in a kind of one-man performance for a team and the rest of the team that don't back him up in a game of this size, would it be more likely that he'll be on the move whenever the transfer window comes around?
He's already carried the team enough times this season. I don't think one more is going to make the difference. I think he knows that he is too good for this team, to be honest with you.
When you talk about players that are too good for the team, there's players that haven't really had a look in. If you look over at Man City's side of things, who are welcoming back a number of players who were out for long-term injuries. Aymeric Laporte has been a massive miss for them, considering he was a massively influential player in their defence, especially since Vincent Kompany left last summer. But one man who has not seen a bit of Premier League action this season after being injured in the Community Shield is Leroy Sané, mm-hmm. who has been an absolute nightmare for Premier League fullbacks to defend against. Is he just another player that Arsenal should be worried about, Raf? Are you dreading the fact that your team's having to come up against him on Wednesday night?
Yeah, I've been having some sleepless nights about it. I think most players are, you know, players that Arsenal should be scared of, but Sané coming back is definitely a big worry for me.
I think for what we're talking about as well, he's just going to provide even more headaches for fantasy football players because, as we've already spoken about, Pep Guardiola likes to play with the fancy players' emotions and not start the players who really deserve to. We had a lot of conversation earlier in the season about Mahrez's lack of appreciation in game time. So with that in mind, are there any bona fide City players that you would absolutely nail down to get a start this weekend and you should include in your team?
I mean, he's still, even though he's a bit of a pessimist, he still has to be trying to chase the league, doesn't he? So he's not going to mess around too much, I don't think. I think he'd still start De Bruyne and Aguero, people like that.
So you've been pessimistic about the whole thing, but should we come to you for a score prediction? Is it just gonna be one of these ones that'll depress us for the rest of the show?
6-2.
There's your 8-6 from the other week. That's the one bold prediction there. If that comes off, I'm gonna be very impressed. It'll be fantastic viewing.
I can see it in the flames.
How heavily would you have a drink after that, just watching a 6-2 unfold in front of you?
I'm going to enjoy it, to be honest with you. It's just going to be quite funny. Because I'm not going in expecting anything other than a complete humiliation. So just, you know, have a nice ride.
I suppose you can't be let down in that aspect. Nothing can really surprise
if they,
you.
If they hit double figures, I'll be shocked. But that's, you know, that'll be something.
That it would absolutely be something. We'll move on. And that takes us to Friday night, where there's another two fixtures to be played. The first of which is a match that sees bottom place Norwich host Southampton at Carrow Road. As mentioned, the Canadians put up a good fight against Sheffield United last time out, but went on to lose 1-0. Well, 10 men Southampton lost 1-0 at home to Newcastle. Taylor, Norwich come back to football 6 points off of safety. Is there any hope for them coming into this restart to stay up?
Norwich are down and out. That's it. They're done. Let's be honest. That's 100% confirmed. Let's see, Jamie's prediction of the year, Watford, they were flying high. I think they've probably got enough to just edge it to stay up and probably gain more points. Norwich, I can't see gaining any more points whatsoever.
I think there's a lot to be said because looking at their run-in, they've got Southampton, which possibly they could win, but then they've got Everton and Arsenal. They've got Brighton at home, Watford away, which if they've got any hope whatsoever, they need to win that game. Then in their final four games, they play away to Chelsea and Manchester City. So there is a lot of logic to what you're saying. But, I mean, just taking away from Norwich and looking at Southampton, have you been a bit more impressed with them considering where they were losing a game 9-0 in the Premier League to where they are just now, the 7th, 14th, really kind of turned their season around?
Oh, 100%. Leicester's 9-0 thrashing today would probably be the best thing that's ever happened to them. Since then, their fortunes has turned around immensely. I'm pretty sure since then they changed the way they played, basically changed some of their setup, and they basically went into, they came out looking a new team after that. Everybody expected Southampton to sack their manager, basically to essentially do a full revamp, but clearly you can see what Southampton board are. They believed in the manager and they stuck with him, and it's clearly paying off because they managed to get him out that horrendous rut they were in, and now I'm pretty sure before the break they were actually on a decent little run. Although they did lose 1-0 in Newcastle before it, they were designed, in fact, I'm saying that, I'm pretty sure they'd actually lost the last two before we went in there, but that is probably completely forgetting how horrendous they ended up falling off. So, you know, they had, since that 9-0, they'd actually end up playing so well. Then obviously it went back to them being inconsistent with our winning games here, losing a couple of winning games. Then they were just relying on basically Danny Ings banging in the goals.
Speaking of Danny Ings, there are two teams that have really been reliant on their strikers. Southampton, you mentioned that they're reliant on Danny Ings, who's hit 15 goals in this campaign and went on that run of scoring in, I think, 8 or 9 consecutive back in kind of October, November time. But Norwich as well, they've been heavily reliant, especially early on in the season, on your main man, Teemu Pukki. Is the Pukki party well and truly over, or is there a scope for a wee bit of a revamp?
If any goals that Norwich will score will probably come from a Pukki assist or a Pukki goal. Like, he'll be involved in it either way. But same with Southampton. They've got a little bit more scope for, you know, more basically see a variety of goals like come from elsewhere. But Norwich, 100% Pukki's going to have to be either really on it or not. But I can see going with the way they were playing, I can see Redmond probably up in his game in this, because he was starting to get a little bit more game time after missing a couple of games. I think he came back, he got a goal. He got a goal when he's come back after, I think, he was out injured. But then he started, he's become that vital player, see, for Southampton, basically helping things, basically making runs, becoming a key player. So if he keeps that up, then Southampton have nothing to worry about. They're probably more likely they will just carry on and finish mid-table.
So those would be the players that you'd be suggesting to put in your team for this weekend, then, the likes of Redmond, Ings and Pukki?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're going to go for any players for this game, it would be probably Dove. Ings is probably a little bit expensive, but Redmond, I'd take a gamble and put Redmond in, because I think he's like 6 million, maybe 6.1 or round about there. So he's a not
right,
too 6.2. expensive.
6.2.
Yeah, he's not too expensive to take the gamble on, and considering the way he looked like he was playing, and just, I know, as you said earlier on, forms went out the window, but, you know, you never know. It's a gamble, actually, in this game, I would happily take.
One other player that I'd always chuck in as a suggestion as a very cheap option that gets returns is Todd Cantwell, sitting at £4.7 million and having amassed a flat 100 points. So he is one of the most influential players in Norwich's team, and I think between him and Pukki, it's the Canaries are really going to have to rely on the pair of them if they are to get anywhere close to safety. Just wrapping up this game, Taylor, a wee score prediction for how you see this one panning out.
I'm not going to say it's going to be a high-scoring game, but I can see it being 3-1 to Southampton, because players will be a little bit rusty. Even it'll be a comical goal, probably, they'll concede. That's what I'm going with, but I'm going to say 3-1 Southampton.
3-1's quite high-scoring for the Premier League, when you think about it, considering what we've been watching in the Bundesliga.
Oh, Bundesliga is just goals-goal.
We'll move away from the kind of down the leagues and look back up towards a game that has huge importance in terms of the Champions League places, as Manchester United visit the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium to, funnily enough, take on Tottenham Hotspur. As mentioned previously, United beat their local rivals Man City 2-0 before the league was stopped, while a misfiring Spurs stumbled to a 1-1 draw away at Burnley. Struan, I know you'll be dying to talk about the fact that Paul Pogba and Bruno Fernandes are available to start alongside each other for the first time. What does their partnership add to United's team, if anything?
I think the main thing is creativity. I think that's been the main problem for United this season. I mean, there does need to be some put on Solskjaer's tactics and setup, but I think in a midfield with the likes of, you know, Fred, Matic and McTominay, who don't even have 3 assists between them in the league, I think creativity has lacked so much. Lingard and Pereira haven't exactly been great either. Bruno Fernandes has come in and has been absolutely incredible, adding assists. Pogba as well has 2 from the first game alone. I think he already has more assists than Fred, and in the league, that is. And he's not started a game since about September time. So I think that shows how important that's going to be. There's been a lot of talk about how the two of them can fit into the midfield, but I think Gary Neville put it right when he said, you know, with City, you know, David Silva and De Bruyne can play in the same midfield, and I'm not saying they are the quality of David Silva and De Bruyne, but I think it is very easy to see them fitting in, and I think they'll help a lot. But there's a lot of talk that Pogba won't actually start, just purely based on match sharpness, and Fred and Matic don't necessarily deserve to be dropped. But I'd say Bruno Fernandes is the fantasy pick for United. He's the player I'd go for straight away.
I think I'll just double check what he's costing, because it's obviously not going to be a cheap pick.
No, he's 8.6 million.
8.6 million.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a gamble, especially if he is kind of going into these last set of fixtures and he doesn't hit the ground running the way he was before the start of before the league got postponed. United actually have a favourable run-in, in fairness. They've got Tottenham and Sheffield United in their first 2 games back, but then they've got Brighton, Bournemouth, Villa, Southampton, Palace, West Ham before facing Leicester away on the final day, which could prove very important when we're talking about Champions League places. Just looking at Spurs for a moment, Mourinho was struggling just before the lockdown came into place, and I think he's a man that will have been relishing the opportunity for a break from football more than anyone else, because basically all of his attacking options were shot and he was struggling to find goals from anywhere. Now he's got Harry Kane back, he's got Steven Bergwijn back, he's got Heung-Min Son back. Will this be a chance for Tottenham to finally go out and score some goals on Friday night, or is it likely that they'll stumble a bit and stall in front of Manchester United's defence?
I feel the way Mourinho's going to set up for this one. Mourinho, if there's one manager you don't want to give a lot of time to prepare for a game, it's Mourinho. I think he'll probably just set one of his midfielders on Bruno Fernandes, the way he set Ander Herrera on Hazard all those mm-hmm. years ago. And I think it's just going to be he'll give the ball to United and just sit back, possibly try and catch them on a counter-attack. I think I see this as a 1-0 Spurs. I'm giving my prediction away a bit early there, but I just think it could be an extremely boring game just on the fact that I think Spurs, I don't know how many will be in the defence. I'd imagine it will just be a back four, but I think it will be a give the ball to United, who, as I said earlier, do lack a lot of creativity going forward. And that's how, you know, teams like Bournemouth, Newcastle, West Ham, Watford have all beaten United, as if you give them the ball, they struggle. Whereas the games against the likes of Man City and Chelsea and Tottenham, who Man United beat, was less than 50% of the possession because they just sat back and caught them on the counter-attack. No Dele Alli and Tananga in the defence, which is probably big. I think he's probably been their best defender this season, but I just can't see them struggle. I think Heung-Min Son is probably the Tottenham man you want to get in your team. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I just don't know if Harry Kane will be that sharp. I think he might struggle, but I think Heung-Min Son is definitely somebody to take note of, and having their players back fit, I think, will help a lot. Because if this game had happened back in March when it was supposed to, given the form, I think it probably would have been quite a comfortable United win. But now, as you said, form's out the window. Mm-hmm. I can't see a clear and obvious favourite, so I think this game will be decided by one goal, if there are any goals at all. Because it should be one of the best games of the weekend on paper, because, you know, Spurs are 5 off United, United are 3 off Chelsea, it's heating up. But I think it could be a real bore fest. And there's the probable Sheffield United are going to be in fifth before the game as well, mm-hmm. which will probably be not necessarily a knock in confidence, but I think it'll make the game even more important.
I love how you were talking about Bruno Fernandes is the one pick that you would take for United, and talk about adding creativity, then predicted a 1-0 to Spurs.
Yep.
It's just prime Struan Garvey presenting against Manchester United yet again.
It is. I think I'd love to be more confident, but I'm too pessimistic, I think. One thing that's interesting about United picks is Anthony Martial is actually a midfielder in fantasy football, which I only discovered the other day when picking my team. So that could be goals from the midfield, but it's one of those games where if United do score early, they could maybe win 2-3-0 or something. But I just think it'll be a Spurs sitting back. They'll score probably in the second half at some point, and then just hold out the game from there. I think Mourinho's, there's been talk as well about he's allegedly been saying Solskjaer's not good enough for the job, he's not quite ready. So there's already some intensity before a ball's even been kicked. So I think it's one of those games that it could be absolutely terrible, or it could be the game of the weekend. It's really hard to call, especially with no form as well, and predicting the starting lineups for each team is nearly impossible.
Well, I think we'll just have to wait and see with that one. A lot of eyes are going to be on North London on Friday night. We'll move on to the first of four that we've got on Saturday, which sees Watford take on Leicester City at Vicarage Road. Last game week, Watford lost 1-0 to Palace, keeping them above the relegation on goal difference alone. Well, we'd already mentioned Leicester's 4-0 win over Aston Villa. Jamie, you've had a closer look at Watford than any of us for your 2019-20 in review series article. Is there anything to suggest that they can get something out of this game, or is it going to be a fairly comfortable Leicester win?
I think there's plenty to suggest that Watford can get something from the game, and I don't think they'll lose the game. That's my Jamie's nap of the week, is Watford to get a result, whether that's a win or a draw, I'm not quite sure. As I said in my article, they obviously before Pearson came in, they were very poor, and he seemed to get a response. They went on a good run of form, and then kind of dipped off. They drew with Tottenham, where Deeney missed a penalty. They conceded in the last minute against Aston Villa, which saw them lose. They then conceded in the last minute against Everton, which saw them lose again. Got a draw away at Brighton. Poor performance at Old Trafford. Beat Liverpool, and then poor performance at Palace. So they're quite an inconsistent team. I think everybody knows that. But, you know, Leicester sit third in the league at the moment. And to be honest, recently I haven't really been that impressed with Leicester. Obviously, I say recently, before the break, I wasn't that impressed with them. I thought their form did seem to hit a bit of a brick wall, kind of barring that Aston Villa game. You know, they lost at Norwich. Okay, they played City, Wolves, Chelsea before that. So they were hard games, but you know, they were games that Leicester were more than capable of getting kind of wins in. Really, you know, the 2-2 against Chelsea was a really good game of football, and could have gone either way. But you know, we saw against Aston Villa what Leicester are capable of when they're on form, when they're having a good day, when they're all gelling together. But I think Watford are going to win this game, and I know that's quite a big call, and understandably so. It's third versus 17th on paper. It strikes everything about it as a Leicester win, but for me, I'm going to stick with my boys, Watford, and I'm not quite sure about a score prediction. I'll probably say 2-1, and I fancy Watford so much that I've actually brought Troy Deeney into my team, because really? I think he is going to get a goal. Maddison has been sold, and Soyuncu has been benched, so I'm fancying a Watford win, Deeney to get you some points, and to avoid Leicester players.
You're putting all your chips on Watford.
That's a big statement. I'm fully aware of that. That's a bold call, but I've stuck with Watford all season, so I'm certainly not going to stab my back on that. Stab them in the back with a knife at the moment.
You mentioned Troy Deeney as being one of the main reasons that you think Watford's going to get the win here, but would their record signing as Noah Sarr play a factor in that? I mean, you talked a fair bit about him in your article on Energy Sport, so
yeah,
he picked up form, didn't he?
He did, and you know, he's a very cheap option, actually. I was just fiddling about with my team there just now, and I was drawn between kind of Traore, or who's currently on my bench and is going to stay there, or to bring in somebody like Ismail Sarr. He did have a bit of a rocky start, but then obviously we saw against Liverpool what he's capable of when he kind of gets a bit of service and gets a bit of confidence and a bit of a run in a team. So, you know, Sarr, I think, is more than capable of providing an assist or getting a goal. But I think for me, Deeney is probably the more sensible option. I'm a huge fan of Dale Afeo as well, but I'm not quite sure if he is fit at the moment. I was reading that he possibly might have a little knock, so I'm not sure if he is if he's going to be playing or not.
I've just had a look there on the database for Fantasy Premier League. He's unknown return date for an injury, so avoid him.
To avoid him, yeah. So he's a big miss for Watford. You know, there's no doubt about it that I said in my article that he's the kind of main creativity spark for them in a team that's not really got much natural quality. So him missing is a real big miss. And I think if he was playing, I think that would increase Watford's chances, increase my optimism, my confidence in Watford to go and get a win. The fact he's missing out is a big miss for them, but I still think the could have enough, and I'm a huge fan of Nigel Pearson as well. I think he's going to have a wee trick up his sleeve for his old club as well. So 2-1 Watford.
That's a phrase I never thought I'd hear. Oh, but fan of Nigel Pearson. I don't know.
Do you not like Nigel Pearson?
Well, I'm a fan of his managerial skills, and I'm not saying I don't know him. No. I've never been out for dinner with him or that, so I don't know what he's like as a person. But
no, as a manager, by average manager, I'd say.
That's bold.
Taylor, I think he would think you're an ostrich for that comment, in all honesty. I think watch your mouth if you ever come into contact with him. So there you go, 2-1 to Watford. Get Deeney and Sarr in your team, and Leicester players should be avoided unless they come back and obviously go completely against what Jamie said, which doesn't actually tend to happen too much. Jamie's pretty...
I like to think I'm alright.
What would sound with your predictions?
My betting account would suggest otherwise, but with my predictions on the radio, I think I'm not usually too far off.
You're not far off. Your biggest prediction was that Watford would be more than likely to be safe, and it's looking alright just now, so we'll just need to wait and see whether that comes up.
We'll see.
In the second game on Saturday afternoon, Arsenal play their second game of the weekend as they travel to the Amex to face Brighton. In their last game, Brighton battled for a fairly credible point as they drew 0-0 against Wolves at the Molineux. Raf, we know your thoughts on how things will go tomorrow night against City, but are you feeling maybe a bit more optimistic or confident for this fixture?
I'm feeling a bit better, definitely. Definitely. Brighton haven't won a league game since, December. Mm. So, as weird as Arsenal are, and as little as I trust them, I do think they can get something from this game.
Who would you say would be the kind of main points in Arsenal's team that are going to get the win for your boys on Saturday? I mean, are you going to point the finger towards your golden boy Martinelli once again, or is it going to be?
Oh, Jack, you know me too well. I was gonna point a finger at the youth, so Martinelli, Saka, Nketiah, Nelson, like players like that, because there's no better chance for them to be getting minutes on the pitch, and they don't cost much on fantasy.
You mentioned Saka there. I had a conversation with someone the other day about his place in the team and if it will be affected, because I think we were under the impression that certain biscuit hips himself, Kieran Tierney, is fully fit again for the first time in what seems like forever. And at 5.3 million, he's a very cheap option for your defence. Are we expecting him to get game time in the next few weeks, or is it going to be a fairly Saka-dominated left-hand side?
I think he'll be the first choice, definitely Tierney, but with the amount of minutes there is to play, I don't think he'll be finishing many games. I think Saka might even start a few to give him a rest. You know, the same with like Maitland-Niles and Bellerin, because both Bellerin and Tierney have been injured for ages as well. So it's just about, I think, switching things up, changing the players around.
Just a mixed bag of options for your fantasy teams there. Just touch on Brighton briefly. I know they've not really been at the races since December. They've not won since December. They've got a couple of fairly decent draws. They drew 1-1 with Chelsea on New Year's Day, and Johan Bash scored that absolutely outrageous overhead kick. But a lot of questions have been asked of Graham Potter, who of course replaced Chris Hughton in the summer. Were they right to get rid of Hughton and go for the kind of lesser experienced Graham Potter, or do you reckon they've been able to find a bit more style, a bit more substance under Potter, and it was the right move?
It was a risk, but at the moment it's paying off because they're not in the relegation zone. It depends about how far they want to go and how big they want to be. Because if you're trying to battle against relegation every season, then you need to try and, you know, like I said, take a risk, go for a bigger manager. So I think he's doing a good job so far.
And just finally, have you got a score prediction for this one? Maybe as outrageous as your 6-2 for Wednesday night.
Just 5-2 this time.
Just a 5.
I'd say 2-1 to Arsenal.
Grounded. Lovely, solid prediction there. I can see that one happening, to be fair. I can see them kind of...
Can you see the 6-2 happening?
You know what? I'm never going to say never when it comes to Arsenal. I just don't think there's any room for any definites with that club. I think there's just so much scope for nonsense that it's unbelievable.
That's spot on.
We'll move on to see another London club in action on Saturday as West Ham take on Wolves at the London Stadium. We've mentioned how both these teams fared last time out, so Taylor, we'll come to you for this one. Can we expect West Ham to get anything from this game? Because we know Wolves have been one of the more consistent side in the league, and they've got a clean schedule now since the Europa League knockouts have been pushed to August.
I feel like the break, going into this game specifically, the break probably helped West Ham, as like they just didn't turn up this season. They've just been lackluster. The fact is, before the 1st of January, they were stumbling to get results. They finally won after what seemed forever. Then after the turn of the year, I'm pretty sure they've only won twice this year. It's just, they've just not got going. Personally, could it be down to the manager? Could it be down to the unrest, or the fact that the fans don't really like the board and they can never fully get behind what's happening? I don't know. But this game of isolation, Wolves were always that team where they relied on form. Basically, they were always consistent. They kept a steady pace going. After a restart, this could be a very even game. I feel like this could be one of the games that could go either way. This could kick-start West Ham into finishing mid-table, maybe 10th, 9th, maybe even push a wee bit higher depending on how well they play. But it's going to be very even, I think, especially when you've got Jimenez, Jota, who's been unreal this season. Wolves have just been looking incredible. But as I said, the restarts have done West Ham favours for us.
I mean, you mentioned them just very briefly, and we're going to touch on a certain Mr. David Moyes. A lot of people, they would give the advice that you don't go back to your ex because you just end up getting hurt, but West Ham have ignored that advice, and are they on course for another breakup with David Moyes come the end of the season, do you reckon?
Well, this is what I don't think so. I feel like it's more than the fans don't like the board, but they think the board don't really put much attention into Moyes. But going with what I've read, Moyes has tried to establish the Leipzig kind of structure where basically what they do is grab the basically youngsters for harness the clubs, basically try and get them when they're like basically 9, 10, 11, build them through the squad and then basically implement them one by one in each position to basically as a second backup. Mm-hmm. But to me, that only seems like you would do that as if you knew you're going to have time. So to me, I think that West Ham board might have Moyes in for a long run, especially when West Ham highlighted Nakia, who has basically been given more playing time this season. He's out of contract at the end of the season, and Moyes is basically begging the board to let him stay. Mm. But the board aren't paying basically what he wants. So this could be an interesting one. If Nakia stays, that shows the fact that Moyes is going to be there for the long run. If not, then Moyes is away at the end of the season.
Just moving away from West Ham and touching on Wolves, we've already said how kind of fairly consistent they've been in the league, especially when you consider they've been balancing the Europa League campaign, which before the postponement of football, a lot of people were starting to maybe get some belief in them that they could go on to win that. Do you think the fact that moving the Europa League knockouts until August now, that's going to lend itself really kindly to Wolves as they can focus solely on the league, and when they've got the likes of Arsenal, Sheffield United and Chelsea to play before the season finishes, do you think they are kind of nailed on to finishing a European place come the end of the season?
Oh, 100%. Wolves are just basically just a hard-working team, and the fact is the Europa League playoffs now until August, that's going to do them worldly good. If you look at the fixtures below show, they were playing, their form dropped a little bit, but they were still playing semi-decent with all the hectic fixtures that they had. And especially with the revamp of Adama Traore this season, who's basically just, I think this is his best season yet. It's been unreal, and he's got to help him a lot, especially with his other partners up front, with Jota and Jimenez. So I think Wolves could finish in a Europa League spot.
Just before we move on, have you got any kind of players that you definitely fire into your team for either side this game and a score prediction for us as well?
Players to put on either side is I think you need to stick with Jimenez. He's just had that season, as I mentioned, Traore. You could stick Jota in, but I would say stick Snodgrass in for West Ham. He's had the most points for West Ham this season, and he's always one where if West Ham get anything, it will come through him. So I would say they three are probably your best bets for us.
And what would you say your score prediction is going to be for us as well?
It's just going to be a one each, but it's going to be entertaining.
Oh, an entertaining one each. There we go.
Yes.
That's the first Jamie McIntosh scoreline we've had.
Yeah, I was going to say that's I'm not happy with that. The first 1-1 and it's not being called by me.
I know. What's going on, Taylor? You know we leave them for Jamie calling.
Yeah.
To reserve them for him.
It was either that or it was going to be a 4 each. You know, it could go outlandish.
Outlandish. The West Ham, yeah, they definitely get 4 goals in them in a game, don't they? The final game on Saturday sees Bournemouth hosting Crystal Palace at the Vitality. Bournemouth fell to a slightly unlucky 2-1 defeat to Liverpool last time out, while we already discussed Palace's last result. Struan, Bournemouth have been enjoying a 5-year stay in the top division, but have looked more likely than ever to drop back into the Championship this year. Do you see this happening at all with their run-in?
Bournemouth fall down. They've got quite a few tough games to play. You know, not normally in the season they kind of have that rally in the midpoint where they, you know, pick up enough points to stay up, but I can't see it this year. They are level on points with Watford, West Ham, who you never know how they've both got tough games coming up, but I just can't see it from Bournemouth this year. I mean, all season long they've looked pretty lackluster. The odd occasional, you know, fantastic performance. You know, they beat Man United and a draw to Chelsea, and I think they beat Chelsea as well. So they sometimes come up with like incredible moments, but on the whole they've just been fairly poor this season, and I think they will go down.
What do you think that's down to then? The fact that they've really just not been at the races this year. They've been kind of one of the better teams to watch in years gone by, when they had the likes of Ryan Fraser at his best, Josh King, Callum Wilson were both firing. Harry Wilson's come in this year and he's been all right, but he's not really hit the heights a lot of people were expecting.
I think I just put it down to bad signings and an ageing team. I mean, Ibe and Solanke were both bought in for big fees and have made next to no impact on that team at all. I think in general as well. Some signings have been good. Lerma's been good. Philip Billing was good this year. But, I mean, the defence has basically been the same it was since day one. And other than that, I just think they lack creativity. I think when Callum Wilson isn't playing at his best, like he has been this season, he's not been quite as good as last year. I think it just shows how much he was relied on. Mm-hmm. And Brooks has been a huge injury loss for them as well this year. And it seems like Ryan Fraser also has kind of got his eye on the door after a good season last year. He's been linked with clubs like Chelsea and Liverpool. So I think he's already kind of looking at his future ahead of him. And I think this Bournemouth team probably will just kind of fall apart if they are relegated, which I think is very likely. I think they'll lose a few of their top talents.
Well, that's what you mentioned, David Brooks there. As if they are to end up staying up, is he going to be a massive influence in their challenge, I suppose?
I think so. I think they'll rely so heavily on him. I think one of their main problems is the lack of creativity and setting up the same team 2 weeks in a row. I mean, as I said before, I've not really seen much from him. Harry Wilson has been pretty good this season, scored an incredible free kick. I think it was against Man City at the start of the season. And he's looked a good spark, but I mean, he's only on loan as well, so they can't really plan for the future with him. I don't know if they'd be able to afford him anyway to begin with. And I just think it's almost just a loss of confidence all around for them. And I think Howe probably has done as well as he can with that team. Mm-hmm. I think the budget he's had, the team he's basically been given, I think is one of the most impressive out of any team stay up. I think it's more impressive than Huddersfield staying up a couple of seasons ago. I just think it's kind of got to that point now where you can't really improve the team. He's done all he can. He probably needs to move on as well, I think. And I don't think there would be any kind of hatred from the fans given how well he has done with the club. I think you could honestly put him in quite a few jobs in the Premier League. So, yeah, I think it's just a matter of when, not if, we're Bournemouth at the moment. I could be wrong.
Could be wrong. We'll move away from Bournemouth just quickly and touch on their opponents, Crystal Palace, who, in my eyes, have been kind of one of the most underrated teams in the league this year, especially through their defensive capabilities. Vicente Guaita in goal has been an absolutely fantastic pickup, and they've really bolstered their backline. The likes of Gary Cahill, who's still proving he can do a job despite not really hitting the heights for Chelsea in the last couple of seasons he was at the club. How impressed have you been with Palace this season, how well they've been able to kind of bolster their defence and keep out opposition attacks?
I think Palace have been the perfect example of the best offence is a good defence. I mean, the last game in which they scored two goals was Boxing Day. They did get two against Man City, but one of them was a Fernandinho own goal, so I don't know if you can count that as they scored two. So, you know, to go, I mean, 6 months technically with 3 month layoff without scored many goals. I think a lot of their performances have been down to a solid defence, likes of Tompkins, Dan, Gary Cahill, Patrick Van Aanholt, Kelly, who has been quite a hero on fantasy this year. I think if Lundstrom wasn't the big hero that he was, I think a lot of people would turn to Kelly. Mm-hmm. Gaeta's been good as well, and Milivojevic. They've just sort of got that spine, a good setup, and they're not the most entertaining team to watch. That's kind of comes with a few of the 1-0s, but I think they have not overachieved as such, but I think they've done a lot better than a lot of people thought they would. I mean, 11th place isn't exactly bad, ahead of Everton, Newcastle, Southampton, and they're only 1 point behind Arsenal, 2 behind Tottenham, 6 behind Man United. It's not exactly in a relegation fight as you might suspect Palace would be in at this type of stage. I think one of the big problems has been as well Wilfred Zaha, 3 goals, 3 assists in the league. He's not exactly been himself. Townsend's had a few injuries as well. There's been a lot of relying on Jordan Ayew. He's just had a pretty good season at the end of the day. But yeah, I think Palace are a good team. They're just not the most exciting to watch at the end of the day.
Well, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head in that best offence is a good defence. But I think the most effective attack from one of their defenders has been Patrick Van Aanholt going at Katie Hopkins on Twitter. Very successful. I think as a student run podcast, we can kind of convey our support for that kind of behaviour.
He's actually tweeted her within the last half an hour as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so we get more to dive into once this is done. Just quickly, you've mentioned a couple of players, but who from either of these two teams would you put into your fancy team before the weekend action?
I've actually gone for Gary Cahill, and I've got Kelly on my bench. So there's potential. I think Scott Dan, Patrick Van Aanholt, as we mentioned, could be impressive. Gaeta's maybe a shout for a clean sheet. Mm-hmm. You know, I've personally gone for Henderson because of double game week, but I think Guyton is a good chef clean sheet. I would avoid pretty much every Bournemouth player. I'm being quite pessimistic with my games at the moment, I have to admit, but this is also the first game in Premier League that's going to be shown on BBC, so it's probably going to be the most watched of the weekend. So
the only one that's free to air, of course.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people probably will tune into this, but in terms of a score, I'm going to steal the Jamie and go for a 1-1. I can't see Palace scoring any more than one, and I can't see Bournemouth being able to score any more than one either. So I think it could be, but as well, the form part of it's always so difficult with these games because you never quite know what's going to happen or who's going to come. You know, Bournemouth might come back all guns blazing and score three or four, or Palace might suddenly score more than one in a game, which would just be incredible. But sadly, I think it's just going to be a 1-1. I think Bournemouth need this more than Palace. I think Palace are kind of safe now. Mm-hmm. They're probably not going to get European football, but at the same time, they're not going to go down. They're just kind of in the mid-table. I think they'll just get on. It's just the time to get players' fitness back. I think they'll have a similar problem in terms of some players wanting out. I think Zaha basically every season looked like he's going to be off. Mm-hmm. Whether they can hold on to him or not, I think it's probably just a matter of when as well, not if, when he leaves.
Fair enough. Well, that's plenty to talk about with that game. And of course, I'm very excited because I get to see Jordan Ayew play football again.
Is he in your team?
He's not in my team because... Oh. No.
He's in mine.
Is he?
Yeah, Jamie, he's on the bench, but...
I knew, I liked you, Jamie. That's good.
He's very cheap.
Yes, he's only... roughly about 5 million, something like that.
I think
that.
It's even less.
5.2 with 100
million. Oh, is it, right?
So it's not actually a bad shout.
It's one of the cheaper strikers going.
I may try and manoeuvre him in if I can get some money from elsewhere in my team.
Struan has just talked me into adding Gary Cahill in there as well.
Wow. That's something you never thought you'd say this season.
Yeah.
My powers of convincing are unmatched.
We'll move on from Saturday's games into the first of a triple header on Super Sunday, seeing Newcastle host Sheffield United at St James's Park. With both teams' previous results all being mentioned, I'll get straight into it with Mr. Ralph Boyd, our resident Geordie. You were keen to talk about this fixture when discussing who was covering which games before we were recording. Why is that? I'm just curious.
Because unlike Arsenal, I actually look forward to Newcastle games. I find them fun to watch and I enjoy the team. But I think it could be alright. I've been very sceptical of Newcastle, but I think they could get a result.
Is that down to one man that we all love on this show very much, the Mr. Gucci headband himself?
He's. I mean, I've seen a few videos of him training, and he's on fire. He really is. But like, I've got a feeling. I don't know why, and it makes me happy.
Well, something to be happy about being an Arsenal fan, I suppose. So I mean, there's that when you think about it. Someone that's not really been happy in their time at Newcastle has been Joe Linton. One goal in 29 in the league. Of course, it was against Tottenham in a 1-0 win, but other than that, his contribution has been incredibly lacklustre. How do you think he'll be coming back into this one with his time off and evaluating potentially his future at the club, really?
I mean, I hope he's done some thinking and maybe, you know, like analysed more games, but he's been very lacklustre this season. You can't really rely on him. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't have an impact when he comes back. Mm.
And just touching on their opposition, of course, Sheffield United. We need to talk about the conversation with them coming up from the Championship this year and looking set almost to be in a European competition next year. How did this even come about? How could we even have considered this to have happened? I mean, how impressed have you been?
It doesn't make any sense. And it is like, you know, being from the North East, it is the sort of thing you want for Newcastle. Because obviously there's lots of talk about a takeover now, but as far as sort of organic, you know, progression goes, they just want. We just want what happened to Sheffield, just a well-run club, sort of a miracle.
And despite you kind of vying your support for Newcastle, are there any Sheffield United players you're including in your team for this
definitely.
Week? Of course, they've got the double game week as well. So
I think I've got Dean Henderson in, and I think I'm gonna have two Sheffield defenders because I've got the double game week.
Good show. And anyone from Newcastle you'd be willing to?
I mean, there's my guy, there's a Saint-Maximin, but apart from him, I mean, obviously I like I said, I've got faith, but not that much faith, you know.
That much faith. With that in mind, what's your prediction? What's the score going to be in this one?
I'm really sorry, Jamie, but I'm going to go for a 1-1 as well.
Oh, yous are just taking the mic now.
Three in a row.
I mean, maybe, one was fair enough. But...
Maybe a 2-2.
can deal with that. Well, Jamie, you'll get a chance to maybe predict a 1-1 here, because a game that I've been excited for since football began to return, as it's allowing me to watch my team for the first time in almost 100 days. Villa play their second fixture this game week as they welcome Chelsea to Villa Park, with the Blues having ruined Carlo Ancelotti's return to Stamford Bridge last game week with a 4-0 win against Everton. Jamie, Chelsea come into this one with their fittest squad so far, as we mentioned at the beginning. How much of a headache will Frank Lampard have when it comes to selecting his starting 11 for this game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's got some big decisions to make, but, you know, obviously it goes without saying that a manager would love to have the opportunity to be kind of spoiled for choice in terms of who to put in what positions. You know, Chelsea have got great squad depth now, and, you know, they probably couldn't have hoped for a better game back, to be honest. You know, you're playing against an Aston Villa team who have lost their last five games. They've shipped, 12 goals in those five games. They are all right for scoring a goal, actually, to be fair to them, but the defence is what's got them where they are in the table at the moment. You know, they've conceded 56 goals in the league. That's the worst defensive record in the league, by a fair few goals, actually. Norwich, 52. But, I think it's the defensive frailties that see them where they are, and I think Chelsea, especially going forward now, you know, we speak about Lampard having a headache, but that's because we've got so much quality in attack now, and I think Chelsea could, if they can kind of get through the first 20 minutes of this game, and the reason I say that is because Aston Villa have obviously got a game before Chelsea, so Aston Villa obviously play tomorrow night against Sheffield United, and this depends on which way you look at this. So you could say, right, so Villa are going to be tired because they've played a game more, or you could say Villa are going to be a bit sharper because they've had that game, and, you know, they've maybe got a bit more of a rhythm, whereas Chelsea coming in cold, if that makes sense. It depends on what way you look at that. So I think maybe if Chelsea can get through the first 15-20 minutes, they'll ease themselves into the game, and I think they'll win by 3-1 because of the amount of players that could be playing, that Lampard could choose. I'm not sure I would rush to pick too many Chelsea players, especially in attack, maybe a defender. But to be honest, I would steer clear of Chelsea players at the moment. Aston Villa have got a double game week, but I don't really see them picking up many points. So I'm not sure I would really be rushing to take any players from this game. 3-1 Chelsea is my prediction, and I wouldn't rush to pick anybody from these two teams at this moment in time.
It's a solid prediction. I think I put Tammy Abraham in just because I don't see Giroud or Batshuayi.
Yeah, striker, you're all right, but out wingers and centre mids and that I would avoid.
Speaking of centre mids, it's going to be the return of Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who you mentioned just in the introduction. How much does he bring to Chelsea's midfield going forward? Because we've seen him, especially to the tail end of last season and his Europa League campaign, where he was a real standout player in a team that was very reliant on one man, being Eden Hazard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mean, he's a very talented player, there's no doubt about it, and he's been unfortunate that he hasn't really been able to get a good run in the Chelsea team, and I think under Lampard's management, this opportunity that has arisen for him, and he needs to grasp it with both hands, but, you know, if he can continue that form from the QPR game anyway, and bring that into this game, then I see no reason why he can't kind of kick on in a Chelsea shirt and possibly in an England shirt as well.
Fantastic. Well, there we go. So, don't really pick anyone for this game, but put a 3-1 on. That's the conclusion we've come to.
Yeah, basically. I mean, yeah, just mainly because much like Pep Guardiola, I think you know, there will be points on offer here, but I just couldn't really tell you who's going to play in those sort of attacking positions for Chelsea.
We'll move on to, depending on other results, the biggest game of the weekend, as it could see the Premier League title won. After much debate, the Merseyside derby is being played on Merseyside, despite concerns for policing and things like that. Everton are hosting Liverpool at Goodison Park. Graham, Everton haven't beat Liverpool in 10 years since a 2-0 victory at home in October 2010. Will they still be waiting to get a victory over them come Sunday night?
Yes, they will be. Because Liverpool are refreshed. I think Liverpool were struggling a little bit. Their first really rough patch of the season before
the break, the coronavirus break, and I think it's going to do a lot of good for them in the sense that they can refresh, they can get their focus back, and they are ready to win the league now.
So here's something, a question for you as a fan. Would you rather one of these two outcomes? Would you rather Liverpool win the league at Everton?
Yes.
Or would you rather that City give them a guard of honour?
Just win the league at Everton. Any day of the week. I mean, it's kind of a strange rivalry, the Liverpool-Everton rivalry, but because it's kind of friendly, but at the same time, they're still rivals.
Yeah.
So to win it, it could just be amazing. It'd be so good. I mean, at the same time, they could still get this. They could get both. It's fine.
They could get both. You're not wrong.
So beat Everton, beat Palace. Even if City win their games, they're still going to win the league. That's the league over.
That is the league over. Yeah, absolutely.
But
so, I mean, just you were right in saying that Liverpool were going through that bit of a kind of rough patch. They obviously lost, missed out on the chance to go invincible with that famous 3-0 loss against Watford. They say they do win the league. Do you think they're going to take the foot off a bit and then just kind of sit back, or are they going to go for the records?
I think because they're out of all the competitions, their goal is now to try and get as many records as possible and really kick on. I think there's a lot of bad taste in Klopp's mouth from going out of the FA Cup so poorly, going out of the Champions League so poorly, that with the league being the only focus now, it's just going to be, we need to get as many points as possible. We need to finish the season and do it through, because of course the fans just want to win the league. The fans don't care about anything really, but I think once it's over, you'll be like, let's try and beat City's points record. Let's try and make our claim for the best Premier League side of all time. And I think that the last 12 games, and bear in mind Liverpool actually played most of the teams in the top 10 twice already, so it's not the hardest fixture list. So there's lots of records. There's so many records from the break. They could try and win every game at. They've won every game at Anfield so far. They're trying to get the biggest points margin difference of all time. Mm-hmm. There's so much to play for them still. It's not a loss season once the league's over.
And it certainly is doable. You still have to play City, Arsenal and Chelsea, but other than that, everyone else is currently in the bottom half of the table. So it's certainly a possibility. Is there any specific Liverpool player that you'd want to suggest put in the team? Because I know Salah's more expensive, but he's been more productive in terms of goals. Mane's still just quite consistent overall. And then Firmino hasn't had the best year of his career at Liverpool, but he's still coming up big.
No goals for Firmino at home at Anfield for the entire season still. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's still the 7th best striker, which isn't too bad.
Yeah.
But there's not really anywhere for Liverpool, on the Liverpool side of things, you can go wrong. I mean, they've got such a solid defence. Alisson, he was out just before the break, so he's back.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the defenders, I'm assuming Joe Gomez will be the one that starts, and he's a good cheap option. And since we have the wild card, we can change around. And Trent Alexander-Arnold, Liverpool have the 3 best defenders in the league, and Van Dijk, Alexander-Arnold and Robertson.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Terrors and Salah and Mane in the wings. Maybe even something like Jordan Henderson is not a bad option. It's a cheap option from certain midfield. So there's a wealth of options on the Liverpool side of things.
And what would you say the score is going to be come Sunday night?
Liverpool win 3-1.
3-1, lovely. That takes us nicely on to our 12th and final game of the weekend, as we see Manchester City welcome Burnley to the Etihad on Monday evening. With both teams' last fixtures discussed, I'll just get on with things once again. Taylor, we'll take a look at the opposition before we even touch on City at all. Burnley have often provided the top teams in the league with a real challenge this season. You think of good results against Manchester United, for example. Do you see the same kind of thing happening on Monday night, especially if Liverpool do wrap up the league title?
Burnley just seem to be... They like to hold their own against the bigger sides. It seems to be their niche that the bigger sides is where they end up coming into it. Although sometimes it goes that way, but we never know. Burnley are that team where it could be everybody's bogey team, or everybody can pick up points. The fact is, the last 5 games they've not lost, so they were on a good little streak. But yet again, it is Man City, and Pep Guardiola doesn't take losing too kindly, so this could end up, Burnley could be blown away, or Burnley could win. That's where I'm going to go. It's one of the two. Burnley either win, or Burnley get blown away.
We've talked about Sean Dyche on the show before as a manager. How what's your view of Sean Dyche? Because me personally, I think he's one of the most underrated in the league. I think he's built up a fantastic reputation with a side that doesn't have much technical talent. They're a big physical side, but they've not really got a lot of kind of natural footballing ability, in my opinion. But he's managed to kick on with them and produce some really good league finishes and results.
I think he's stubborn but fair. Literally, he'll acknowledge where his wrongdoings are, but if he thinks it's working, he sticks with it no matter what. I generally do think he is massively underrated. If you just look at the last couple of seasons where Burnley have been finishing and basically how they've been staying up, like Burnley have turned into that team where everybody just recognises they're in the Premier League, and that's it. They basically belong there now, and that's just down to Sean Dyche just plodding away. I don't understand why he doesn't get the recognition he deserves. Maybe it's just the way he plays football. Maybe it is like the most Brexit football ever. But, you know, maybe it's just he isn't as extravagant as what Guardiola or what Klopp and all that are. But honestly, I generally do believe him and Eddie Howe might be the, obviously not this season, Eddie Howe's been poor, but him and Eddie Howe are probably up there with the best English managers probably in the country right now.
That's a big call. We'll take a look at City quickly. Considering that Liverpool are more or less going to wrap the league up in the next two games, City are obviously still contesting their decision to be banned from the Champions League for the next 2 years. If they are still awaiting the outcome of that decision, how important do you think it's going to be for them to finish in the top four to see if that decision does get reversed?
I feel like their full season could define on that decision. I don't think it... I don't know, because whether they could go through all of this, it could be not worthwhile, which I could... Obviously, I don't see them dropping out of the top four. I can't see it happening, but... basically, if that does happen, then City, I don't know, it depends. When is it they find out? Is it after this league's finished they'll find out?
I think mid-summer sometime. I could be wrong with
that. Yeah, well, if the league's finished, then they'll 100% just aim to stay in it right now. But say that doesn't happen, then basically that's just good news for Sheffield.
Yeah, right enough. Just finally to wrap up this long-winded 12-game discussion, have you got any key players that you'd want to highlight or a score prediction for us?
Key players would be obviously good. I would stick Mahrez in, Aguero. I think Guardiola's obviously Guardiola's rotation, but going with this, I think Aguero, Mahrez would probably be the ones I'd go for. Mahrez being the more of the gamble, but Burnley, maybe McNeil.
Yeah.
McNeil, I'm trying to think. I can't remember the other ones that were doing well before it. Mostly Woods, maybe.
Chris Woods, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Like he's been actually no bad. Rodriguez is that, but apart from that, I would say McNeil's probably your best bet. But if you want to go, I would say stick Pope in, but it's Man City you're playing, so just don't even bother. Don't even bother. But your Man City ones would easily be like Aguero, De Bruyne, your usuals. And if you want a little left field gamble, go for Mahrez. And my score prediction would be... I'm going to say it's the first game back, probably just everybody's feeling refreshed, probably a good 3-0 to Man City.
Yeah, to City. There you go. Well, that brings this long-winded and massive episode of the Fantasy Ramble to an end. A massive thank you to everyone for listening. We are buzzing to have Premier League football back again, and I'm looking forward to bringing you more content on Energy Sport in the coming weeks. Be sure to look out for our collaborative piece on every game week, where our football writers will be putting across one opinion that they've taken away from each set of fixtures to come. We'll be back next week to preview a smaller selection of fixtures with a smaller number of hosts than we've done today. But for now, I'd want to say a massive thank you to Graham, Struan, Jamie, Taylor and Raph for joining me today. And a massive thank you to all of you for tuning in. I've been Jack Donnelly. This has been the Fantasy Ramble on Energy Sport. Stay safe and we'll see you next time.